This is based on the device costing around $10,000 a piece, and the Linn County Driving Under the Influence Task Force wanted to try for 10 people, and for the cost of the device to be used for 10 people for 2 years, it came out to be about $7 a day. And this is a figure we use. It wasn't meant to make any money, just to pay for the device. And that was the recommendation.
Okay. Now, I got a witness back here that thinks she can shed some light on this. Come on up, would you please?
For the record, I'm Nancy Farrar, Deputy Administrator of the Corrections Division. House Bill 2116 does not preclude the use of electronic monitoring devices. They're allowed as it stands in the bill. The courts already have the power to collect fees for supervision, and I don't think that it needs to be specified in the bill. From my perspective, the fees that the court can already impose would cover, or could cover, the cost of supervision through home monitoring.
I would think so myself.
Mr. Chairman,
send them around.
Is it not helpful to spell this out so judges don't have to speculate as to what they can do? There's lots of speculation in the world. It's nice, you know, some judges like to see things written down. It gives them confidence.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, judges already are imposing supervision fees that we are collecting and have been collecting for several years now. This is something that I think they already know that they can do. The bill can be used for DUIIs. I don't know that that needs to be specified either. What the bill precludes now is the use of house arrest for somebody who would pose a threat to public safety in terms of using a dangerous weapon or threat of bodily harm. Other than the car, I guess. And
I think, and with that information, maybe Senator, you agree. Maybe it's better that we don't if they already can do it, and then we would put something in limiting how much they could charge. They may need to charge more, or for this service, we might actually be restricting what they already are able to do. I would be reluctant to try to. Have any idea what an appropriate fee would be. I think if that would be something the judge would probably have to determine after they had reviewed what the cost was going to be and so forth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if the bill does not exclude including the DUIIs, and the judge has the option to impose fees, I would withdraw my amendment so that the bill can move expeditiously to the floor.
Any other questions?
Maybe our staff measure analysis, Mr. Chairman, could reflect that essentially what Senator Yee wants to do can be done by the bill as it is.
Yeah, I would.
That would appreciate that. That would make the matter very clear.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I'll call the question.
Okay, is it Senator Hamby? I think your motion is still before us.
Oh, this is fine.
Any further discussion on Senator Hamby's motion? Call the roll, please.
Brockman? Brown?
Aye.
No, we were Cohen?
To
do all this
already. Bailey?
So aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. That carries. Now, I just wanted Senator Yee to stay there a minute because you'll recall that this committee passed out a bill that repealed the, I guess you'd call it the riot statute, which is a three-section statute. And from what I understand, the governor was concerned really only about subsection one. Senator Yee asked me if we ran into something that we could use to put subsections two and three, repeal subsections two and three into the that she'd appreciate it, and I told her I would do that, and we are indeed looking for such a bill, and if we can do it, I'm sure the committee would agree to do it.
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Yes.
I thought the police had signed off on that bill. I recall that Governor's veto measure was some kind of police concern, but the police had signed off on this bill. Maybe we should try just to override it.
There's a representative of the Portland Police Department.
They object to the mandatory language in subsection 1 also, that the police officer shall go out and arrest the crowd if they do not disperse. They didn't like that shall, the mandatory language. That's why they withdrew their objection.
I don't think it's any big deal, but anyway, if we are looking, Senator, and the committee, I'm sure will agree to do that if we can find an appropriate bill.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This can be done before the session's over.
Well, if it can't be done before the session's over, it won't get done then, will it?
Yeah.
Because there won't be anybody here to do it.
I guess not.
Okay, we'll take a look at 2126, please. Is that in the, that's in a different book?
That's the black book.
Yeah.
At least mine's black.
Okay.
We want a hand-gross version of this.
This is one of the bills that we heard last night having to do with review of criminal cases in the Court of Appeals.
Yes. Were any members of the committee that are present here not here when the hearing was conducted yesterday?
I wasn't, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I was here during a part of the hearing, but I did not understand the reasoning behind changing the conjunctive cruel or unusual to cruel and unusual. What does the Oregon Constitution say? Does it have or does it have and?
Judge Gillette testified on that, and I can't remember, but maybe Judge Joseph knows.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, George Joseph, Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals, the Constitution contains neither or nor and, it contains a comma, but it means cruel and unusual, and that's the way that provision has been read in the Constitution. This whole little thing happened because someone on the Senate committee staff noted that the legislation had always contained the word or, but that the constitutional language with the comma and the other words had been read as and, cruel and unusual. This started out as merely a conforming amendment. It was not meant to be controversial or very substantive. It was simply meant to conform the statutory language to the constitutional term. And that's why that was done that way. Now, I think it was pointed out, Mr. Chairman, yesterday that the amended summary on the House amendments of June 4 replaces the wrong or. The summary, the proposed amendments replace the correct or. The summary is wrong. The proposed amendments are consistent with the intent of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, if you found to be a Court of Appeals judge to be an error about what the Constitution says, or at least an ambiguity, would you be quiet or would you point it out?
I would sure as hell point it out. I hope you did.
I could hardly wait to point it out.
Well, I'm reticent. Article 1, Section 16 says cruel and unusual, and then it says punishments.
Punishment.
So,
okay, I'm sorry, I'm saying correct.
You could argue that that, since it was plural, you could argue that it meant or.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can clearly say it says and, well, either one.
But my point is that the only purpose of this was to conform that terminology to the wording of the Constitution. It was, and it's what it means, I can't imagine that it has any substantive
Well, I can think of unusual punishments that many people wouldn't think was cruel. Is it cruel to have a person stand downtown saying, I'm a drunk, I'm a drunk?
No, wait. I should go off through. The issue of it has never come before the court. It doesn't represent any change in the law because it has never been interpreted what cruel or unusual means.
You'd have to know what the law was in order to know whether it was a change.
That's correct. And it was not intended to, to do any such thing.
Well, I've done my damage. I'm entitled to retire.
One of us is, I suppose.
Not both. I've often thought that public embarrassment would be a good thing to do, and I suppose I'm just slow in my development.
Well, this isn't your first experience with that, Senator.
Yes. You mean I've embarrassed you publicly before?
No, but I think so. I've never had that pleasure before, but I've seen it done, so I believe in it just like I believe in baptism.
Same reason. What I'm trying to say is that I think there are some punishments that involve public embarrassment, like being in the stocks at the village square, that aren't cruel and unusual. My values apparently are different than that of some of the courts, however, who think it is
cruel. You know, it just occurred to me, I have a set of stocks in my office. We can test them. We can test that out.
There's a Delaware or New Jersey case in the last 30, 40 years.
Right.
The last 10 years. Anyway.
Well, you know, this thought occurred. Senator Feeley, are you through?
Oh, I'd say I was finished as soon as he got back his spunk. Yes.
It's interesting to note that cruel and unusual. I suppose we could say the death penalty was cruel, but if it was not unusual, then it wouldn't be unconstitutional because it would have to be both cruel and unusual. So it's going to still be cruel, but it's not going to be unusual pretty soon, is it? I don't know, maybe it is.
Well, I trust it will remain unusual. This is a personal matter.
Okay, any anybody got any problems left with this?
Well, I've got a motion.
Oh.
The substance of the bill would reduce the number of reviews, and I'm wondering whether it will meet constitutional muster, whether the Supreme Court will look at this cruel and unusual and say there is a constitutional provision there, and you can't fail to review where a constitutional claim is made.
Well, that would be...
If you changed it back to or, I wouldn't be as concerned.
Now, the word end put in the House, right?
Yes.
House staff.
Sua sponte.
No, Senate.
And I'm sorry, Judge, but did you tell us why that happened?
Because...
Somebody thought...
Someone had read the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous.
And saw how the word was and.
Oh, wow.
And that's a dangerous thing.
And does mean or sometimes.
And does mean or, but felt it was consistent with the constitutional language, and I acceded to that change, never dreaming that it would become the subject of controversy, because my primary issue in this bill is to attempt to reduce the impact of our having to sit, being required to sit in judgment of sentences for which we have no facility, and for which there is another agency empowered, and it's simply an attempt to reduce that quantity of cases passing through the court. I understand there's some dispute about that.
I don't think that we could change the meaning of the Constitution, therefore I'm not concerned about the and/or anymore. It will still be up to a court to construe.
That's, I agree wholeheartedly.
Senator Henderson.
Am I correct that in Section 2, by taking out the language is cruel, unusual, excessive in light of the nature and background of the offender or the facts and circumstances of the offense, that is restricting the right of review?
That is restricting the scope of review and would take us out of what we refer to generically as the sentence review business, which we have statutory authority to do, which we have not exercised in any general way. We have said that we would only do it in effect. Despite what the statute says, I think it's fair to say, and I think Mr. Henning could go along with me on this, that we have in fact said that we would, we are not likely to set aside a sentence that is within the limits of the law of the statute and it is otherwise constitutionally sound under the statute. But that has nothing to do with the number of cases that are brought to us primarily by the public defender office.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was wondering, though, if there could be circumstances in which a person perhaps was sentenced to what was in the maximum allowable one, but might still be unjust if you looked at the total situation. But you're saying that is not a matter the court is going to get into anymore.
That has been our case law. That has been our case law under this statute. Since 1978, I believe.
And I guess what you're saying is if we conform the statute to the case law, maybe these lawyers will quit raising the same issue over and over again.
I'd like to broaden the statement a little bit further. As it presently stands, the public defender is compelled by the existence of the statute to advise the person to want an appeal but have no error to proceed on, that they may have an appeal on the question of whether the statute or whether the sentence is cruel, unusual, or excessive in the light of the nature and background of the offender or the fact. Given the statute, it does no good for the public defender, for example, to say to the person, you're not going to win. The public defender can so advise, that the public defender is still required to bring the case, and we have anywhere from 25 to 45 of those cases on our docket. I would not try to make the committee think that those cases eat up a very great portion of the time of the Court of Appeals, but when you take into consideration the work of the public defender, the work of the case processing part of the Judicial Department operation, the setting of cases for hearing, the reading of the briefs, the hearing of arguments in those few that are argued, the post-hearing decision, and the general clerical work, the result of which in all cases is affirmed, then it's one that could be eliminated. Now, the public defender, I have no doubt, he's duty-bound to challenge the statute as amended.
Mr. Chair.
And that's what I would expect.
I see the public defender is sitting there, one of the public defenders. Could he come up?
Well, come on. Mr. Henning is not the public defender to whom I was referring. But,
I have to say that we did have a hearing on this. Mr. Henning testified yesterday, but...
Could I just ask, is it your experience that these cases don't have merit that are in terms of...
The ones that I've seen the reports on that weren't AWOPT did not have merit. My feeling is more and more with what the legislature is doing, by not looking at all of the possible things they're adding in terms of sentencing, this particular provision that would be removed may be necessary. What you just did in the last bill that you passed to the floor was to set up a situation where someone could be under house arrest for a misdemeanor for 1 year as a condition of probation when they could only be sentenced to jail for 6 months. And the present law would allow an appeal to the court and say, look at this individual. Don't look at the constitutionality. Don't look at whether it's within the limits which the legislature has said you can impose. but look at this individual and see whether or not this is the sentence that's appropriate. That's what's being removed. If it is removed, we still have a way of raising it. All we're going to do is change the assignment of error, and the assignment of error will be the condition of probation is not reasonably related to the crime and to the individual. But you're making it much more difficult, and you're going to make the proof element much harder than it is now for it even to be looked at.
Thank you.
But the trial judge, of course, has already done precisely what you say we ought to do.
Mr. Chair. I think there ought to be more review of the trial judges.
What if Mr. Hennings knows of anybody who would prefer to spend 6 months in jail than a year under house arrest?
Well, I have clients that would take that. Yeah, I had a client who was very upset because the DA charged him with a misdemeanor when he wanted to go to the penitentiary and not local jail time.
Not unusual.
I mean, I have clients that would be a pleasure.
I guess I don't know too many of your clients.
You may have clients for whom being at home is cruel and unusual.
Yes, you haven't seen their house.
Or their spouse.
Right. Is there any other mechanism for the judicial branch to review a disparate pattern on the part of a judge?
A disparate pattern on the part of a judge. I assume that, and I think Jim would agree, it is conceivable that you could make a habeas corpus case that is directed at the behavior of a judge, but there's no standard method for appellate review as such, no.
Yeah.
There wasn't before the statute was passed in 1977 either.
This talks in terms of the rights of the individual defendant who's been sentenced, and I'm trying to think of the integrity of the judicial branch if somebody's really out in left field all of the time.
No, there isn't here. The Judicial Fitness Commission is one resource for that, although I can't immediately spot.
The other way it's done is by filing of affidavits, but all that does is avoid the problem. It doesn't answer the problem.
Yeah.
In the individual.
There seems to be no contention that the judicial branch has a mechanism for retraining a judge.
Nor under the statute, may I say. We have the capability.
No, I agree that it talks only to what the individual does, or the individual sentencing.
I think a judge's name in an appellate opinion has some retraining.
Yeah.
Well, sure as hell makes for unfriendly conversation.
Okay.
Well, let me find out now.
You don't have
just a minute.
Yeah. You probably don't have it.
What do you want to do with this?
I'm at the most marginal end. I vote on it. I really have to prefer not to.
Do you want to? Shall we carry it over or something, or do you want to table it, or do you want to? Somebody give me a motion.
I'll move.
All right. Senator Simmons moves to send House Bill 2126 as engrossed to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Six people here.
Okay. Call the roll then.
Brown?
Aye.
Owen Bailey?
No.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson? No.
Simmons?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. Motion fails. All right. That's where we are on this. Let's see. I'm about to lose. Senator Simmons has to go make up a form someplace.
And Senator Hamby and I have to leave.
Okay. I'm supposed to be testifying in two committees whenever I get there, but I'm going to be back.
I'll be back in probably 2 minutes.
All right, we'll be back in how many minutes?
Maybe three or four if they can't get to me, otherwise
we'll
it's 15.
We'll be back in about 20.
Well, we should be able to put them out quickly.
We're going to take a recess and reconvene at
3:15.
3:15,
okay, sir.
Yeah.
We may recess?
We'll be in recess till 3:15. Okay. We can't do anything.
Right. We'll try to get through it with education as quickly as possible. If I get a floor over here.
What was the action on the last vote?
It failed. I've got four votes to go out and two votes opposed.
Needs five.
It needs five to go. Okay, it's 3:18 p.m. and the Senate Judiciary Committee is returning from recess. Senators Brown and Fryer present will be in recess until a quorum arrives. Yeah, okay.
Hooray! Hi, God, I'm glad to be back for a minute.
For a minute, huh?
Good news for me, like my heart is
living in me. Oh, water.
We shouldn't have been sent.
We kind of got your bills prioritized.
All the bonding stuff out there.
All the bonding stuff got what?
Walter's complaining that his 11D bonds got sent to trade to me.
No.
And I said we got all the bonding stuff there.
No, but I can do that when you get back, so I have to be able to sign these and get them up, too.
No. Okay. No.
One, two, there's three of them.
Yeah, we're waiting for a quorum. We're in recess while we get a quorum, which is going to be momentary.
Well, I appreciate the chance to breathe.
I'm going to sit up here.
One is the one that we pulled the bill back from the floor, Senate bill, because we've done exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's the same as
527.
Jan ought to be available, isn't he, Walt? He's done with Ways and Means. Ways and Means is done. One more Janet. Mm-hmm.
What? One more and you'll be
48.
When we get one more.
I don't remember off the top of my head. No, I don't.
No, let's try the rest of them.
2098, that's a court of bills. Not these bills.
You found the screw up down here. Well, I don't think they did.
Okay, want to go back and run it again?
No, I don't think we need to.
But you got a hand unscrew?
Hand unscrew, yeah.
I'm taking you on face value. You always have pretty face.
You will. I'm going to note.
Provisions of. Provisions. Provision is enforceable with respect to those liens for which a person need not give notice of the right of lien, of a right to lien.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay, on a commercial improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 3:25 p.m. The Senate Judiciary Committee will reconvene with Senators Failey, Brockman, Brown, Frey, Cohen, and
Joyce is back here. That's five.
It's five. I just named five, didn't I?
If Senator, yes.
Okay.
You're five.
Okay.
We are at 2743.
Yeah.
Are we just rambling through this?
That one in order. Okay. 2743 is in the, which color?
Black book.
That seems like.
Yeah. There is an engrossed version of the bill. And this is another of the bills that we heard last night.
Numbers written on
2743.
I know how I read about it.
Now, again, I don't recall who among the five other four members were here when we heard this yesterday, but the question I raised, which is really not on the merits of the bill, but you'll notice the relating clause, and the bill in its initial form would take care of the medical expenses, impose those expenses upon the jurisdiction which had authority over the prisoner, and the House amendment has to do with medical expenses of prisoners in the custody of police agencies, but not in a correctional facility, if I remember, while being lawfully transported. The argument was made that there are sometimes people become injured or ill while they're in transit, like on extradition.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Fadley, I thought maybe you might have a comment on whether the relating clause was a problem on that amendment there.
Well, they amended the relating clause, but they did.
For instance, the city is liable for cost of the prisoner held in a county facility.
Well, that's what the main bill does.